Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is Norbert, Satan, Slut, Morfan.
No one laughs at a master of quack fu, Hoffmeyer.
All right, snot nose. Stop getting all snot nose on me.
Hey, you relax there, Mr. Zitz.
I love the names in this movie. Just snot nose, slime bag, scum bucket, filthy scum bucket. Not just a scum bucket, a filthy scum bucket. Filthy. I love the language in here. And I love that they, Howard the Duck went PG rated. But then there's an orgy spa, jacuzzi jam. There's so much gratuitous Leah Thompson, who she works so hard in this movie, by the way. She nailed, I was reading an oral history about this movie. And she said that I'm very proud of this because that duck gave us nothing. And she said that she was reading lines with puppeteers, and there's no jokes, no anything, and she just had to react to it. And she went, I am very proud of this film. And when you watch it, she's flop sweating, trying to pull off this role. And I admire so much that her, Tim Robbins, they just put everything they had into this movie. I mean, Jeffrey Jones worked overtime. And it's just watching them with a duck, and it's beautiful.
I'm gonna tell you right now, the reason why this movie doesn't succeed in 1986 is because it has 21st century, very, very late 20th century comedic sensibilities. It completely goes into what it is about. It is unashamed. This is a movie about a duck from outer space, mm-hmm. and everybody just reacts to him, period, full stop. Okay. And so Leah Thompson, she lives in a shithole apartment in Cleveland, right? And she's in a struggling band with songs that are on the low, written by Thomas Dolby.
The people who worked on this soundtrack, man. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Thomas Dolby wrote the bulk of the songs that the group Cherry Bomb performs, and Howard the Duck. Ain't no way to conceal it. That is George Clinton, a.k.a. P-Funk.
Yes.
All right? Okay? So these people are fully invested in their roles. It's not a wink and a nod, sarcastic kind of thing. It is basically an hour and 40-minute sitcom starring a doc.
Wow. It's Elf.
Everyone takes it incredibly. It's basically Alf. Perfect. Thank you.
Wow.
It's basically Alf, but with a duck. And God bless the voice actors. I think there's about 8 to 10 people that put Howard together. And plus, there's always somebody in that suit, man. Always. How do you breathe out of that thing? I have so many questions.
I have answers because I've read the oral history. And they just talked about how they had to sew him into the suit. And I don't know why they did this. But they ended up getting this kid, Jordan Prentice, who was 12 years old when he worked on it. And then they had Ed Gale, who also worked in The Duck.
Ed Gale.
But what they, I don't know why, they hired a 12-year-old kid, and then they had to sew him into a suit. And this poor child.
Okay, so that's clearly child abuse, right?
Yeah.
That's clearly child abuse.
And the suit that they had little engines inside of it, and he said that he had engines whirring inside of his face all day, and it would kind of burn a little bit. And this is a 12-year-old child inside of this suit. And Leah Thompson was talking about it. She's like, I was supposed to do this like flirty scene with a 12-year-old. And I think she just said, get him out of this, put Ed in it. We're not doing this. And it's
the principality. Absolutely. It's the principality.
I don't understand just the decisions. So George Lucas even backtracked on this movie. He went, probably would have been better. So he wrote, the first day we shot the duck, its mouth opened so wide that all the flesh tore and you could see inside. It was like the Terminator.
Oh, that's horrifying.
And then he wrote, I just thought, oh man, this is going to be tough. Oh, that's what the director said. the director, Willard said,
Yuck.
He said, oh man, this is going to be tough. And then Gloria Katz, and this is why I love the message you sent me earlier. They went, we knew we were in trouble when we did a press tour, and the Forest Press went, who exactly is this movie for?
Exactly. Who is this movie for? There is no answer.
It's not a child's film. Because
it's not.
Howard has the little condom in his, condom in his wallet.
Not only does he have the little condom in his wallet, it's unwrapped.
Oh, gosh.
Okay? So Howard is just pulling what is basically a used condom out of his wallet. And are you ready to go to town, doll? You know? Nah, chill. Oh,
and he comes home, he reads Play Duck. So this guy yes. comes home, does some work. He's like, okay, time to read some Play Duck. Like, that's my night. And there when he lands on Earth, everybody is doll, toots, baby. He whistles at waitresses. He calls her yes. a doll. It's
yes.
That
yes.
would work if you were in the 40s. And you were,
Howard isn't. Like, he's aggressively male.
Yeah, if you're like, man, say, like, bugs, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, toots.
Yeah.
Yeah, say,
hey.
Oh, man.
I want some. Want some ham and eggs and water now, Toots. Get over there, you know. Need a cup of Joe.
Angels with dirty faces, say. You were sleeping with everybody.
What do you mean, duck condom? What are you talking about?
Quack, quack, say.
And then the horror of the Play Duck, yeah?
Oh, gosh.
Is that these ducks not only have breasts, but they have nipples. He has acknowledged that he comes from an egg, so what the hell do ducks have nipples for?
Oh,
I am horrified by this scene, and yet a little bit aroused, because it was like 86, and I was young, so I was still trying to figure out what the mommy-daddy dance is all about, you know what I'm saying?
So, and then the bathtub scene, and you're just sitting there going, geez. You're just thinking, is this a PG movie? And then he lands on Earth, he goes to a club, Leah Thompson's immediately assaulted, and,
yes.
and then they kind of have a flirty moment together.
Right.
And then he goes and works, he gets a job.
Yes.
And he works at a brothel? A jacuzzi
it's
brothel?
It's a spa because there is a mud bath. That's what he ends up pushing the terrible boss into.
With a
he
bra
ends up
in
pushing
there.
The terrible boss. Yeah, he pushes the terrible boss into the mud bath. So it is technically a spa, but they're absolutely just having a lot of unprotected sex in there. And the floor is quite frankly are sticky.
Is he a terrible boss? Because Howard, you don't know how long he's been working. Mm-hmm. He walks in, leaves his cart there, and just starts smoking a cigar. And he looks at the guy and goes, I'm taking a break. Like, that's not...
again, people are having unprotected sex everywhere in this place, okay? Why is the line being drawn at, I'm taking a break to smoke a cigarette? It's not like he's watching the people have all this unprotected sex.
True.
The man needs a break, okay? And also, he's not a man, he's a duck. He's a duck trapped in a world that he never made. Give him a break.
Is bonk. But I was watching this scene. I'm like, man, they're showing a lot here. And then the Leah Thompson scene later on with her in the bed with the duck where she's messing with him. And then he's like, oh, I can't. I got a headache. And it's just. and then it becomes a chase picture. There's a 45 yes. minute scene inside of a diner. I got to say, though. That plane that they're on, that stunt work in that scene, though, they are landing. Cars are just missing that thing, and they are landing
That's right.
on cars. That
That's right.
is my favorite moment of the film, because
really,
here's the thing. You have this duck, and this duck is calling everyone toot and baby and doll
and baby
honey and
doll.
Whistling and just all this stuff. And then
chuckles.
Nobody really reads as a character in this. There's a lot of caricatures, which is fine.
Right.
But then you have this action scene with a duck and Tim Robbins putting in overtime, just yelling. And in the oral history, Tim Robbins said, I love that movie. I got paid twice because we just,
yes.
I don't know how we did it, but I got paid a lot. I got a lot yes. for that movie. Yes. And because everyone just sat around waiting for the duck. But they're landing on things. And they are really, that's dangerous what they were doing. I know that
no
Everett
CGI.
Creech was the stunt coordinator. I mean, it's a guy who had done a ton of movies. So, I mean, Young Guns, like he had done Near Dark. Hey, but
oh, that movie! Wow.
Knew exactly what he was doing, and you could tell. But it's just,
yeah.
Man, that's because it just he did Marathon Man. He was a stunt coordinator on Magnum Force, Dirty Harry. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. This guy knew exactly what he was doing here. Jeez Louise. But that's what I liked because it felt real to me. And then I love the monster, but this movie, it's the longest. Okay. This sounds really weird, Norbert. It's
Enjoy
the
yourself.
Longest hour and 50 minute movie I've ever watched.
You think so?
I think so.
But, I've always found it very breezy.
Oh, wow. It dragged, man. I had to do it.
Explain. Explain.
I give every movie a chance. I love every movie.
Right.
I really do. But I just put it on and just there's no. Okay. You know what it is? And this is my theory. We were talking about the movie Kung Pao Enter the Fist the other day. And since there's no central narrative, it's a bunch of gags. The 80 minutes feels like 2 hours because you're never into a thorough storyline. For me,
there is no plot.
When we watch, what are some movies that we've talked about on here that have been popular? Total, that has a through line. Gremlins.
Yeah.
You get a gremlin, gremlins get spawned, you have to stop the gremlin. So you're watching this film and there's a story. And you know what happened, you know the end. So you're in the front of your seat, you're engaged with it. What's next? What's next? This one, the beginning of the film is just a series of scenes. Like he goes to the bar, he does Quack Foo, he meets this manager, and then it becomes another movie entirely in the second half. And it speeds up when you get to the monster, but it's never a cohesive all the way through picture for me. It jumps and jumps and moves and there's not much momentum in the beginning because you just keep getting halted of momentum.
I know exactly what you're saying, man. And the thing about it is Howard the Duck, the comic book, okay? Howard the Duck, all right? Howard the Duck is a fictional character appearing in American comic books published by Marvel Comics, created by writer Steve Gerber and artist Val Mayerick, okay? Howard the Duck, the comic books are made for people who do drugs. Period. Period. Point blank. Okay. I have Marvel Unlimited, the subscription, and I have gone back and read a lot of Howard the Duck comic books. Okay. And the Howard the Duck comic books that start in 1976, there is no real plot. Okay. You look at the cover of Howard the Duck issue number 3. All right. And it says martial arts mayhem as you've never seen it before when Howard becomes master of quack foo. All right. That's issue number 3. All right. And then later on, Howard is doing a parody of Star Wars. Okay. And then also Howard the Duck is in the arena of no return where he becomes a pro wrestler. All right. And then there's issue number 9 when Howard the Duck is fighting a beaver over what appears to be Niagara Falls. All right. There is no story to Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Howard the Duck is supposed to be an avatar for the everyday man going through life, trying to figure out what the hell the point of all of this shit is. That is what Howard the Duck is all about, man. And so Steve Gerber, when the movie comes out, he says, you know, the movie was, it followed the spirit of the comic books, which is basically him saying, you know, this is a piece of crap. I'm not into it. But at the same time, you cannot replicate what goes on in a Howard the Duck comic book on screen. Not with 1986 technology.
Absolutely.
It is completely bizarre. And so when you say there is no through line, that's because in life, there is no through line. You know, you get born, you do things, and then you die. But in between, stuff happens. That is Howard the Duck. And when this movie used to come on WPIX Channel 11, I have to always bring that up because that's where I saw all of these movies. I would stop the remote control.
I mean, Norbert Moore. Here's the thing. I told you, I love this movie. I do. And I love the monster at the end. And I love how
awesome.
I love that this movie, sometimes I think this sounds very reductive, but we watch a lot of films. And I think a lot of films just, okay, that was fine. And then you forget about it. You watch a picture. Right. It does what it needs to do. Sometimes it does what it needs to do really well, but it doesn't have enough to make you just go, wow, I am watching this. You just watch it like, that was fun. That was cool. Like, I dug it. What's next? Howard the Duck. It feels exhilarating. It feels draining. It feels odd. It feels bloated. Tim Robbins' character isn't even a love interest in this character. He's just a scientist.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
He's
comic relief.
Yeah, and he's comic relief. And he works. But it's
he's comic relief. He's not a scientist, dude. He's a lab assistant who's basically a janitor.
He cleans up Upchuck in the
he cleans
fossil
up Upchuck in the museum. All right. And you do realize that he literally said, "This is a temporary job until I finish school and get my own museum." Okay? That is his character's arc.
He has the best line in the movie. He's like, I brought pizza so I could watch you undress.
Deadass. He was completely serious, too. Like, he was joking, but he wasn't joking.
I think that was about to happen. He was just going to eat pizza and watch her undress.
He was going to try. Because Cherry Bomb, they don't play those games. Man, Cherry Bomb doesn't play those games.
They're tough. I like me some Cherry Bomb. But they do play I don't know if they read the room too good, because she was playing a very depressing song.
Yes.
And everybody was into it in the club. If you see the people in the club, they're dancing, they're happy.
They are.
And then she goes, this isn't rock and roll, or this is really boring. Yeah,
this is too depressing. And then, give me your beat, which is the 80s.
And then they're like, all right, whatever. Like, they were into her. She's at a super punk club, and people are just digging this song.
And so, it's 1986, and this is the movie of movies like... The movie of movies, Jesus. Rewind. This is the year of movies like Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
The iconic Aliens. The straight-up slobs versus snobs, Back to School. Okay? These comedies are coming out. These science fiction movies are coming out. 86 was a big year in terms of, okay, we're past the 70s, the start of the blockbuster era, and now we are really getting into, these are specific genre movies. Boom. Delta Force, starring Chuck Norris and
Marvin. I love you some Chuck Lee.
Yeah. okay.
And Top Gun.
The Fly, Top Gun, GoBots, Battle of the Rock Lords, featuring the voices of Margot Kidder, Telly Savalas, and Ryan McDowell. Jesus Christ, man. Mm-hmm. And then you drop a movie like Howard the Duck that's basically about nothing. It's about a duck who likes softcore pornography and cigars, that was in a rock band, that decided to go into advertising after his music career failed. Yeah, people are not going to get that in 86, man. It's the Reagan era. You know what I mean? I promise you, if this movie came out during this streaming era, this movie would be big.
Because it's different. This is a movie that you don't forget. Watching
exactly.
It, you're just the choices in this with the toots and the you never get a chance. Howard is never given a chance to be a likable or redeemable character. Now I get what you're saying. It's almost just you're essentially just watching. It's a really interesting choice too. Howard comes home. He puts his keys down. He's okay. Howard comes home.
Yes.
His girlfriend is. I took a picture of it. She's out somewhere else on a bachelorette party or trip with the girls. And she's like, I miss you. But then he listens to his voicemail, and there's someone that's apparently he's.
It's cheating. Another chick.
Yeah.
Right. It's another chick. Yeah. Yeah. He's a man whore.
He feeds some fish. He has his cheeky posters, like My Little Chickadee.
Mm-hmm,
and then he immediately pulls out a play duck. And you're just, that's an interesting intro for your main character. Because we have a promiscuous duck who loves Playboy.
A promiscuous.
And it's, there's no, like, there's, right? There's just, you see a photo of Quack Fu, which they set up later. Yeah. You see the photo of him in the band. So they do a lot of checkout stuff.
Right. Absolutely.
When do we ever have these kind of intros? That's the intro to this movie.
Okay, listen to me. You get a very solid baseline for what normalcy is for Howard. And like you say, thanks to the glory that is Chekhov's gun, all of these things are eventually resolved at the end of the movie. You know, unlike some films, Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Something was in my throat. Howard, okay? Howard is a master of quack fu. Howard is, quite frankly, a player, okay?
Tell me about quack fu real quick.
All right. Well, here's the thing about quack fu, all right? No one laughs at a master of quack fu, Mark Hoffmeyer, okay? And the reason why they don't is because a master of quack fu is in total control of his surroundings, his mind, and his body, okay? A master of quack fu cannot be denied that which he wants to receive in life, okay? A master of quack fu, quite frankly, will knock you the F out, PG-13. Okay? And so you see the confidence that he has throughout this movie. For what it's worth, he is a creature that is not supposed to exist on the planet Earth, and he just gets by off of straight self-confidence in a lot of situations, okay? He goes on a public bus in Cleveland after he comes out of the spa/orgy club. And people are just openly mocking him. He's like, yeah, whatever. He gives them the old school tap the bottom of your neck with the back of your hand, like Italian, yeah, whatever, F you. This is what quack fu brings to your life, brother. And I will sell you the tapes for $19.99.
His
you too can become a master.
This street fighting, Norbert. I've already bought the tapes. So
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Well, I'm on volume 3.
Can we do a Skype one time? We'll Skype in and we can just do the classes together.
Listen, and just quack foo all day. Everybody was quack foo fighting. I'm sorry.
He seems to be a... His quack foo falls apart pretty quick. But it looks like he's the type of martial arts practitioner where if you only practice one martial art and you get into a... If you're a jiu-jitsu fighter and you're fighting eight people, that's not going to work out too well for you. So you need to be able
to pivot. It's really not. Right.
So he pivots and he just starts hitting people with wood and running it under their legs. So he goes from quack foo to street foo.
Unfortunately, the problem is that according to the Marvel Comics character database, he is 2'9". So the laws of physics, you know, he can only put so much power behind his quack foo blows.
Yeah, that's because maybe in his world, Duck World, those blows would level somebody in the next week.
This is correct. This is correct. However, the creator, Steve Gerber, was not cool with the concept of Duck World. He wanted it to be more of a anthropomorphic, just animal world instead of Duck World. He thought that Duck World was comic booky. He thought it was cliche. He thought it was, that's not my thing, you know? Yeah, he wasn't into that. And so what Steve Gerber actually created in his mind is the world that is now the home of Sonic the Hedgehog, a.k.a. Mobius.
Oh.
Yeah, mind-blowing. Breaking news.
I see it.
Breaking news.
Duck World.
Right. Duck World.
He takes everything so chill. When he lands on Earth, he's just annoyed.
Yeah.
It's just, and then he meets Leah Thompson. He helps her. She fights too. I like that Leah Thompson jumps in there. Like, she really, she's not just letting him take a beating. But then he kind of guilts her into her taking, this is a very interesting movie.
The 80s emotional beats, okay? Where the music lets you know how you're supposed to feel. This movie hits them all. Okay. That when you're the world's on your shoulder. And Howard's sitting there shivering in the rain. She's just looking over. She says, you know what? Thomas Dolby says I have to take him home. And there it is.
I got to tell you one more thing before I forget. So he brought, Lucas brought in Willard Hyuk. I listened to a video too to get this name right. And I still mess it up. Hyuk. I listened to it, and I already forgot. And then you have Gloria Katz. He went to film school with them, and they wrote American Graffiti. They wrote Temple of Doom. But what I find is most interesting is that Willard, his career really halted after this movie. And if you look at Roger Christian, who worked with Lucas on Phantom Menace and a lot of his other films doing Second Unit, who directed Battlefield Earth, and George Lucas recommended him for it. I feel bad for Lucas acolytes who go on to other movies that just... I mean, listen, Battlefield Earth had a reason to tank. It was part of the franchise pictures. Awful. Like, franchise pictures, they said the movie had an $80 million budget. They swindled most of it. They sent it out to Canada. They found an abandoned mall, luckily, to shoot in. They pretty much had nothing, no money whatsoever. And the people working on it kind of loved it. They're like, we had no money, but we had to get really creative. And so I feel bad for Christian and Howard because... Willard and Roger, because they were Lucas acolytes who, and Gloria Katz, Oscar nominee Gloria Katz, their careers, I feel bad. Yeah, I just want to say, I feel bad for Lucas acolytes.
Listen. You're telling me, number one, that a movie that is basically a metaphor for Scientology not only failed spectacularly, but was also a cash scam? That's mind-blowing.
You need to look up franchise pictures.
That's mind-blowing.
And so... Elie Samahi, he started Franchise Pictures with this in mind. So he found movies that were in turnaround, or if, let's say, Sylvester Stallone, at the height of his power, couldn't get a movie made, studios were just like, no, we're not making this movie. Elie would be like, yes, I will make this movie for you. But they would make him take a pay cut, send it to Canada, shoot it. But they could shoot their passion project. But before they could shoot it, Elie would take a cut of the movie, dropped the budget, so then they had to re-scrap everything on the set, and then eventually got sued for like $120 million from a German company, and then the whole company went under. But this was Ballistics X for Sever, Sound of Thunder.
Yes.
I mean, some of the really bad movies, Art of War, Whole Nine Yards was their one success that got him a ton of press. But yeah, there's some really neat articles about that. But yeah, Battlefield Earth, the cameraman said he had the lowest lighting budget for any film he's ever worked on for Battlefield Earth. And they just ran out of money, so Roger Christian just said, Dutch every angle. Make every angle Dutch to make it look like a comic book.
Well, what you were saying about the George Lucas acolyte, Harrison Ford famously said, George, you can type this shit, but you sure can't say it. Yeah. Move your mouth when you're typing. George Lucas had a great imagination, okay? And then
he's a world builder.
He just had a Scrooge McDuck money bin to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we know this because the best Star Wars movie directed by Erwin Kirshner.
Oh, yeah. Back,
okay. That's the best one. I will have no debate on this. It's the best Star Wars movie.
I don't know what comes close.
Yeah.
Now, call me crazy, but I would watch Return of the Jedi before Empire, but I would never say that it's better than Empire.
How dare you? You're lucky that we're on the other side of the planet.
I
don't have to flay you alive.
The Rancor. I love Jabba's Palace.
Okay.
I think the Ewoks get a bad rap. And I get it.
Okay.
But
okay.
These are tiny, well, regular-sized creatures for their home planet. They are creatures who went willingly into a battle against well-armed laser murderers, stormtroopers, who actually had good aim when it came to the Ewoks.
When it came to the Ewoks, they could nail them. Totally.
I mean, Ewoks were getting slaughtered left and right. And they're cannibals, too. I love it. But they went out of their way and died. A lot of them died. Even the Gungans. A lot of them got murdered, a lot of Gungans. Did you see all the Gungans getting wiped out in that battle?
Gungans were useless. Okay. Gungans were useless
now,
creatures.
I just like the Ewoks because they had some cool traps. They really helped. I think but they also had an edge. They were cannibals. So sure, they're toy grabs.
They did.
I don't even care if they're toy grabs. Who cares? I love the Ewoks. And I think that they're brave. And they're...
Empire Strikes Back, Hoffmeyer. How dare you? Okay?
No, Empire's better. Empire's better. But I would watch Return of the Jedi beforehand.
My first question is, Empire Strikes Back, how dare you? The second question is, Joe Roma's Cajun Sushi. Would you eat there?
No.
Define yourself.
That place, no, I would not
Howard
eat there.
Howard the Duck, Cleveland, Ohio, their premier sushi restaurant is called Joe Roma's Cajun Sushi, okay? And let me tell you, out here in South Korea, plenty of fusion stuff going on. For example, you can buy pizza in South Korea. Corn. But what's on it? Corn.
But it's cheaper than Pizza Hut.
Okay, okay. Not only is there corn on it, but next thing you know, sweet potatoes. Inception, boy.
Quick question.
Your pizza has sweet potatoes and corn. Speak it. Speak your words.
Why is Pizza Hut so expensive out there? Because remember, I think I went with you once. Did I go with you? I don't know who I went, but it was so expensive. It was 30-some bucks, I remember. In 08.
Yes, yes.
Odd. And then, but the corn pizza, $6.
Franchise. Franchise fees. You got to pay for the franchise fees, brother.
Oh, that's what it is?
You got to pay for the franchise fees. Absolutely. And also, Pizza Hut. We find it delicious in America. Why won't you find it delicious in Korea? Blamp! Inception blamp. Okay. Now, here's the thing. Joe Roma's Cajun Sushi, okay? Howard the Duck goes there with Beverly and Dr. Jenning, who is at this point quickly transforming into one of the dark overlords of the universe,
and
right?
Been totally transparent about it, by the way.
It's just not hiding, okay? He is speaking his truth, okay? He's speaking his truth. Now, they go to Joe Roma's Cajun Sushi, and what do they order? Steak and eggs! Explain.
The special, because they just ordered the special, so they didn't know what the special was. Three specials, three beers.
Okay, when have you gone to a sushi restaurant that has a Denny's menu? Question mark.
Now, it seemed like there are two different sides of the restaurant. So I think that they were quite smart to keep a fusion side and then a steak and egg side.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I mean, you look at the client, there's a lot of different clientele in there.
The clientele is diverse.
So I do think they're smart. Because here's the thing. If I started a brewery, I would mainly focus on pretentious IPAs that I would enjoy. But I know that I'd have to have a seltzer, a lager, a stout, and like a goza or a sour. I would have to. Yeah. Have one of those options.
Right, some kind of Guinness clone, right.
If I had 10 beers, 5 would be IPA, and then the other 5 would be stuff, 2 lagers, you know, like just to make sure if people come in. Because I understand if you have 10 IPAs, that's not good for business.
Right.
So this restaurant, they get it. They know, listen, we need to have fusion. I mean, this is bold, this is new, but we also need to have something steak and eggs for people.
Okay. Okay, now, I mean, I feel you on what you're saying, and this is why Howard calls it Cleveland, because it is a place that makes no sense. And there was a long, long period of my life when I would say Cleveland when talking about Cleveland, even when I went to school in Ohio for 4 years. I'm going to tell you that right now. And the best line in the movie is when he goes, if I had a place to, if I had some place to go, I wouldn't be in Cleveland, okay? That is hilarious. All right?
Mine is. I got whiplash.
There are so many great lines in this movie. Run, Howard! He's in a bad mood! You know? I'm telling you, man, I can appreciate from what you're telling me that this is not your, you know, this is not a movie that you're into. And I get it, brother. But, you know, I still love you up, down, left, right, B-A-B-A start. You know, you're my man, 50 grand.
I love this movie. What do you mean? I just think it's
bonkers. I don't know, man. I don't know. It is bonkers.
It's okay.
It is.
I 100% get what you're saying about the comic book, because you need to have, if that's what the life is, that's what how Howard the Duck was popular. But when you put it on screen,
right?
This doesn't play like a Friday or Dazed and Confused or Everybody Wants Some, just a hangout picture, as I call it.
Right.
And then it also wants to be a summer blockbuster.
Right.
And then it also wants to be a kind of punk movie where he has a side plot about becoming a manager that never comes back again. And it's
right. And it also wants to be a raunchy 80s sex comedy the first 30 minutes.
And so I don't know if that, so that's what makes this movie so endearing. And that's why so many people write about it, because it is all over the place. It has a bunch of different plot lines. Jeffrey Jones said that crews would get fired on a regular basis, and it was not necessary because they weren't doing well. He said people had to get fired because there had to be a reason that we weren't making the progress that their people should have been making. So this...
Because the movie has no tone, you're fired.
It got really far behind with the duck, and people were talking about working on it. And I do think that the director... And I think the director just got in over his head on this. I think Willard, as a first-time director or major film coming out to be handed, like a major, major film to be handed this a animatronic duck that, frankly, I know the costume designers are proud of it. And I think all the work they did in regards to the motorization of the lips. Also, this is the movie that they actually were able to paint out the wires that pulled his...
It was the first movie.
Exactly, correct. Yeah. And like Matrix and all these movies use that.
The first movie that, using those big-ass wires to float the couch along, used computers to take it out. It was the first movie because ILM, baby.
And
Scrooge McDuck.
I love Dark Overlord at the end. I think that monster looks...
It's awesome.
Wonderful. It's awesome. It's beautiful. All I'm saying is this movie... Just, you could tell it suffered from behind the scenes issues because
the consistency of the tone. I got what you're saying. Yeah. The tone consistency in this movie, it's all over the place. Is it a sex romp? Is it a movie about flying? Is it a sci-fi comedy? Is it a will they, won't they type picture? I get you.
And there's no urgency in the beginning, but then all of a sudden there's urgency.
Right.
But I think.
Right.
This is going to sound weird, but I think the people tried to make the best movie possible. And I do think the duck was a big issue in regards to time, because the duck took a lot of time. And you had to, I think the idea to cast a 12-year-old child to be in that suit with the child labor laws.
Child slavery. Absolutely.
A child can only be on set for a certain amount of time. So you're already taking up a lot of time putting it in the suit and out of the suit and the bathroom breaks and the child needs their lessons. They need to be taught. So you're already setting yourself back hours a day.
So this is true.
There are decisions in this movie that I think some had to be made on the fly. Sometimes the duck didn't work. Leah Thompson just said, just shoot the back of its head. Let's go. Come on. she said that. It was hilarious. And
I'm not disagreeing with you.
I just think that I think very fondly of this movie. And if the people were just hating on it, being mean, I would defend it for, you know, till my last days. But I do think it's such a cult classic because of its mishmash of tones and Howard being bonkers and just the sheer innuendo of it all and the spa, the love spa, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of 80s sex com in the beginning, yeah. Absolutely.
And so it's just not one movie, but it also has a really cool ending, and they built some huge it sets. Does. I mean, that yeah, set at the end is gigantic, and I think it's true. Looks cool. And well, as I said, and this isn't insulting either, every actor is worked in this movie. They flop sweated for this picture, and you can tell everybody behind the scenes was working as hard as they could. I just think it needed something. It needed more urgency in the beginning. Bring the Dark Overlord in the beginning, so then they have to hunt the Dark Overlord down.
Perhaps. It's the biggest problem with Howard the Duck in that there is no iconic comic book moment for Howard the Duck. You know, so we know that Superman dies. That's iconic. We know that Lex Luthor is Superman's biggest villain. That's iconic. We know that Batman and the Joker, they are two iconic villains. We know that at some point, the Joker literally uses a crowbar to beat Robin to death and then blows him up. That's something that's never really been in a movie, you know, other than kind of hinted at in the Snyderverse, right? Yeah. We know that with Spider-Man, at one point, the Green Goblin is going to take Gwen Stacy and just toss her off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yep.
You know, and she's going to die. We know about the spider bite. We know about the killing of Batman's parents. We know about the rocket ship from Krypton. Howard the Duck just kind of ends up on Earth because of the nexus of realities that was supposed to be guarded by the Man-Thing. The Man-Thing is the Marvel version of the Swamp Thing for DC, even though Man-Thing technically came out first, but like by a couple of months or something.
Like yeah. Slade Wilson and Wade Wilson?
Yeah, exactly. Like the way how Deadpool's costume is basically Spider-Man's costume, just with Deadpool. The eyes are the same, you know, that kind of thing. That kind of thing goes on in comics, you know? And, you know, Man-Thing, you know, if you know fear, those who know fear burn by the touch of Man-Thing. And then suddenly Howard the Duck comes wandering out of this comic book. I swear to you. The comic book was called Adventures of Fear, I think issue number 19. And that's the first issue that Howard the Duck is seen in the Marvel Universe. And then after that, Howard the Duck just gets his own series. And the first issue of Howard the Duck, what's going on there? Howard the Duck, like it says on the cover, because you demanded it. The fabulous first issue of Marvel's most sensational superstar. Against sword and sorcery, Howard stands side by side with the Amazing Spider-Man. Because, of course, you know, if Spider-Man's on it, hey, somebody might buy this comic book. All right? So Howard has there's no through line, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. There's nothing going on with Howard. What's Howard's iconic thing? He sleeps in a bed with a hot chick from Cleveland who's trying to be a model, you know? Does he hook up with her? Maybe. I don't know. It's not really clear. So Howard the Duck is supposed to be a satire character. He does parodies of things. You know, he does parodies of Spider-Man. He does parodies of Superman, of Batman. Forged in the flames of frenzy, the most unwilling warrior of all, Iron Duck. You know, he's supposed to be Iron Man, except he's dressed up in a fire hydrant instead of a suit of armor.
Wow. Oh, got it.
His most famous character is Dr. Bong. Dr. Bong is a guy who has a bell for a head, and his left hand is the thing that rings the bell, a bell end, as our British friends would say.
Wow.
You know?
So, so what it came from was just he just showed up and then he was a spoof.
Exactly.
And then you have to develop a character for him.
Well, his character in the comic book is that he's just basically an asshole.
Got it. And then this he's one, they try to make him endearing, but he's not endearing. He's more.
Right.
I would rather deal with. I have a question, Norbert. Sorry to interrupt you again. No,
break it down.
Would you rather have a complete asshole of a character or one like Howard?
Well, this is the question that we will never have answered. You know, what if they made Howard not likable? Because Steve Gerber was going for that in the comics. And by the way, Steve Gerber died. God bless the dead. If you get down with that, he died. Pulmonary something, something. Bad way to go. But he did get a chance to redo Howard in Marvel Max. It used to be on Marvel Unlimited for you to read, but now it's gone. I was trying to read that because it was really good. But anyway, yeah. So Howard, if he was a super, super jerk, okay, it ends up being problematic because how does Beverly still like this dude? You know, he's not only is he not human, okay, but now he's an asshole duck, you know, trapped in a world in which he never made. That can't be it. And so this is the problem. This is the beginning of the problem with the tone shifts in this movie. We can't make ass. We can't make Howard into a total jerk because then Leah Thompson and just, oh my God, prime Leah Thompson. Oh. Anyway, we cannot make prime Leah Thompson a believable person if this duck is just treating her like crap all the time and just being mean and snarky. So they tone it down, and what ends up happening is Howard is just, he's lovable, he's sarcastic, you know, he's not about eating eggs. Mm-hmm. That's not his thing because, you know, he comes from an egg. But yeah, this is the thing. This is and I totally agree with what you're saying. But this movie is watchable because it is the train wreck.
Yeah,
that you're watching. It is the cars colliding.
I want to defend it a little bit too. Gloria Katz said we didn't have enough time. She said you wait for these executives to read the script, and every week that goes by will cost more in the long run. So we were finally given a go in May of 85, and the duck had not been built. We had to start shooting in October for a summer release. It was very tight schedule for that kind of production. So they had to, okay, you're shooting in October, and then you have to get released in the summer. So you're planning for a summer release. That is not a lot of time. That's next to nothing time right there. And so all these people were looking at the script, analyzing every word of it, because, you know, George Lucas had the power to get this done, but it was also Howard the Duck. So then they kept getting delayed. Then, I mean, if your script keeps changing, you can't buy sets. You can't do this. You can't do that. So I feel for it, right? Because they didn't have that much time to get this done. And it did receive August release, but that's still not a lot of time to shoot, edit, promote, and release. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the duck couldn't get decided on. The duck looked like, you know, they kept having to change the look of the duck. Like, nope. So finally they got this duck that looked nothing like Howard the Duck. Correct? Does this duck look like Howard the Duck from the comic?
Well, the problem is Howard the Duck in the comics is basically just Donald Duck in a different color.
Yeah,
exactly. And eventually Disney told him, hey, buddy, let's talk about this Howard the Duck guy, you know, even though it's the 1970s, we're still Disney. You will pay a terrible price if you don't change what he looks like.
So they had that originally, and then they kept having to change it until they came up with what they have now. That wasn't what they wanted. So everything was just rushed. I really do think everything was rushed. And I heard set days, like, I think everybody was working hard, but it's just I do feel for this picture. Now, it had a lot of money, but money doesn't matter when your duck doesn't work. It doesn't matter your script isn't finished. It doesn't matter when it's been rewritten and rewritten and rewritten and you have to go shoot with the first-time director. So it's just...
And again, that all comes from, usually, as we've seen in comic book pictures, they would just take something iconic from the comic books, you know, even Blade, you know, it's not that Blade was a super. It's not that Blade was a super popular character when Blade 1 came out, but you get that character of Deacon Frost, who was in the comic books, and he was a dark dude. He was a dark dude, right? So with Howard, all you have is, like you keep saying, this duck that doesn't work. When the duck is on screen, all right? This is one of those things that today would be totally CGI, like that movie Paul.
Yes, exactly. And Seth Rogen with the voice.
Right. And I'll tell you, for what it's worth, I'm never taken out of the suspension of disbelief by looking at Howard. It's creepy and it's weird. It is, to me, one of the things that toes the line most closely of, what do you call it? The Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Because it's creepy as hell, actually, but it's cool.
The eyes.
Because of the personality. Yeah. Right. The eyes.
The eyes don't really work. But, you know, I kept looking at the duck going, is that bad? Is this duck terrible? And I never once said yes.
It's great.
I think it was just, I think though is what they had to build it. They started with one thing and ended up with the duck. Would they have been happier knowing that they should have started with an alternate design when they started designing a duck? Sure. Mm-hmm. But I do think, honestly, the problem's not for me about the duck here. It's more about the character of him and the tone, like bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, hey, so how about this? Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk more Howard the Duck. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks, and I have a surprise for you, Norbert.
Break it down.
All right, Norbert, Satan Slut, Morvan, wonderful motorcycle gang, by the way. You're 1986 Norbert.
Yes, sir.
All right, and you're going to go over to a friend's house, and you are going to watch an all-day movie marathon at their house, five movies.
Okay.
This is probably 1987, because then all the movies will have been released on VHS by then.
Right.
But you get VHS to rent five VHS films from 1986 for a watch, like an all-day watch. Does that make sense?
All day we're watching. Yeah. We're watching movies, we're eating microwave popcorn, we're drinking Sunny D.
Exactly. And you get five movies that you can go watch.
Totally.
Now, we're kind of, I think... What we can do here is we can have Matt. We'll put it up for a draft, but we don't have to worry about taking the same movie. So we can both have the same movie because this is this like we're going. You know what I mean? If I said I'm taking this and you can't have this, your movie watching thing's not gonna be as great. So
right, true, true.
All right, so I will. What's your first rental? Immediate rental.
Okay, it's 1986 films, and I'm watching movies in 1987.
Yes.
Short Circuit 1.
Yes.
Who's Johnny? She said, and smiled in a special way. There she goes. Woo!
Oh,
the bars.
Oh, so you.
The bars in your mouth.
All right, so you just grabbed that. Oh, man. You know what?
Who is Johnny? I'm sorry.
Now, clearly I was too young to watch this movie, but knowing what I know now, I'm taking Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh.
Because I've loved that movie for as long as I've watched it.
This is fair, but Big Trouble in Little China, it was a thing, but it was not Short Circuit.
No.
I promise you. I was there. Short Circuit was massive.
Oh, so good.
It was massive at the time.
What's your next movie that you're taking?
My next movie? Wildcats.
Oh, yeah.
Wildcats. It's the sport of kings. Better than diamond rings. Football.
Oh, man. Oh, there's so many good ones here. This is hurting me.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking
you're going to lose.
I got to go back and look at Young Mark, I guess. What did Young Mark love?
I'm not sure, but I'm going to tell you this. Wildcats, not only does it have what we all loved about 80s movies, just gratuitous Goldie Hawn nudity for no reason in this football movie. They just had to show her in the bathtub doing the Halle Berry, nudity move. From Swordfish. Yeah, Halle Berry was outside, and Goldie Hawn did the same thing in 86. For no reason.
Right.
But LL Cool J wrote the Wildcat song.
Really?
And it's the first pairing of Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes.
Whoa, I did not know that.
It's the first pairing, and it's their first movie.
Okay, now I need to watch that.
That movie's awesome. That movie's awesome.
I gotta say Karate Kid Part 2.
Oh,
because you're young. I love those movies.
That's fair. The glory you love.
Because
you fight.
Young Mark sequels didn't really matter, right? They just sort of.
Right.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to take that one. All right.
Okay. Next. Because I was really into this movie.
Little shop. Horror.
Yes.
Little shop. Opera. Oh.
And thanks to the glory of the internet, I found the ending that was from the theatrical play. Because
really?
the theatrical play did not end well. Don't feed the plants. They ended up taking over the world.
I mean, that's what they do. They spawn and take over.
They actually shot that ending, though, and that was not the theatrical ending. So on the DVD release, you can see you can see the actual ending. Look out, here they come for you. And I was also in that play in high school.
Nice. Oh, I need a copy Brooklyn of that.
Brooklyn Technical High School, class of 95.
I'm taking Three Amigos because I watched that a lot as a kid.
Fair enough.
Sweater bit and the plethora. Oh, man. And the silliness of the, like, My Little Buttercup. Just,
yes.
Oh, my gosh.
A plethora. I don't think you know what that means. A plethora. All right. Ready.
I'll hurt you if you stay.
What movie is that?
The Fly.
Yeah. Exactly. You see? That's how iconic that movie is. There
oh,
you go.
Man.
Notice I didn't even use the title. The movie where Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis just, quite frankly, do the Humpty Dance all over that apartment. Yeah.
Now, I'm taking a movie I wouldn't take now, but back then, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I watched that movie so much as a kid.
I don't think it holds up. I've tried to watch it recently, and I'm not into it.
When you're a kid, he's cool. When you're an adult, you hate him.
Exactly. He's just a prick.
Yeah.
Just
a straight-up prick. Worst.
Like, I would punch you about the face and neck, Ferris Bueller, constantly.
So you have Short Circuit, Wildcats, Little Shop of Horrors, The Fly, I Have Big Trouble in Little China, Karate Kid Part 2, Three Amigos, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
And guess what my final movie is?
What?
Aliens? Get away from you, bitch.
Yeah, there it is. Aliens.
Yeah, you knew that.
You know what's funny? As soon as you said that, oh, man, so you have a strong... I mean,
if I lose this, quite frankly, your audience... is on mescaline.
Okay, so I'm done. I have no chance of winning.
I can't lose. I cannot lose, son.
So I have Rad. I have Police Academy 3
Rad.
With the jet ski chase. And I love Sweet Chuck as a kid. I love Sweet Chuck and Zed.
Rad. Why didn't you pick Cobra, starring Sylvester Stallone and Brigitte Nielsen?
I'm talking about as a kid. Like back when Sweet Chuck did the kick and his shoe flew off into Zed's mouth. That was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Rad. It's called Rad.
What do you got against Rad?
Oh, because it's called Rad.
It's the bicycle movie with Sparks on the soundtrack.
No, son. I love you, but I can't co-sign this, man.
I did watch...
Crew Joe.
Okay, I have Big Trouble in China, Karate Kid 2, Three Amigos, the Triple Lindy from Back to School.
Back to School's amazing.
I know I'm stretching this out, right? But I'm really trying... I've lost, so I'm just trying to pick something that... As a kid, I would just love watching. So you're young.
How about Robotech the movie, Raw Deal, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Oh,
I mean,
oh man, I got to do One Crazy Summer because I was just a total Cusack kid.
Demi Moore, Bobcat.
Okay. Hey, I still got Bobcat on my team. I kind of want to get rid of Ferris Bueller's and take Police Academy 3. Can I do that?
I mean, please, because we both agree that if we were to meet Ferris Bueller in real life. We would just punch him about the neck and face until he stopped moving, you know. Not until he was dead necessarily, but until he just submitted, you know.
That scene where that one woman's like, I'm going to marry Ferris Bueller. And then he just starts hitting on the ladies when he's running home.
Yeah.
Yeah, no good. All right, let's get back in. We know it was a long draft, but 86, man, that brought back memories of scouring the VHS section.
But this is the point, man. You know, these are... Every single movie that we've chosen, these are bizarre films for the time. You know, these movies, they were genre movies, sure, but they were redefining the genre, you know?
I love my
Short picks. Short Circuit was like some kind of adorable Frankenstein movie, you know? And you realize that Johnny Five was made for war, but he was just not into it, man, okay? And then you have America's Sweetheart at the time, Ally Sheedy. And Steve Guttenberg, who I will never understand why he's famous, but Steve Guttenberg holds it down with Ally Sheedy, and they're adorable, you know?
Because he's good.
Yeah.
Such a bad comment. He's good. I should have brought Blue Velvet.
Yeah, brother.
You know what I hate, Norbert? If you and I showed up to a party, and there were two different rooms with VCRs, and you showed everyone your movies, and I showed everyone my movies, I think you would get 78% of it.
I'm going to have to, and I'm sorry. It's only because I'm slightly older than you.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's
it. I love my picks. You have some humdingers though.
Your picks are fair. Your picks are fair.
The Flying Aliens is tough to finish with. I'm finishing with Police Academy 3 Back in Training with Zed and Sweet Chuck.
These are no. Just no.
And Hightower holding a boat, and Michael Winslow in that movie takes a jet ski underwater, then uses his hand as a periscope. Yes. He also jumps over criminals' heads, goes an additional 6 feet over them, comes back down, lands, does nothing with the jump, just confuses people, then kicks somebody.
It's a terrible movie, man. I only watch, quite frankly, I watch Police Academy in a series when I do watch Police Academy. You know, I just watch like 1 through 6 and just go for it. But that is because on that day, I am drunk as shit. Like, I am under the influence of something.
Oh, man.
Okay. Like, it's hard to be sober and watch Police Academy right now. It is. You know what? Why don't you switch Police Academy for Back to School, bro?
Not a chance. Stop trying to tell me what to pick. I got two Bobcat Goldthwait movies. That was my childhood. I love it.
Dude, you can't tell me that Back to School is not better than Police Academy.
All I think about is a triple Lindy and the little fart noises. That's it.
That movie's incredible.
If it had jet skis, I would add it.
Dude, Slobs versus Snobs.
You want to hear a great Leah Thompson quote about Howard the Duck?
All right. We were talking about Howard the Duck. I'm sorry. This has been weird.
I had an amazing hairdo, and it was a nightmare. Right. I don't even know how I have hair on my head. 6 months of crimping. They'd spray it with Aquanet that would come off in white clumps. It was ridiculous. I remember saying, just get me a wig. And they were like, that's too expensive. How could it be too expensive to get me a wig? Recently, the hairdresser from Howard worked on my TV show, switched at birth. And I literally had a physical reaction. My hair got scared. I'm happy with my performance. I worked my butt off, and I sold a lot of absolutely impossible things. That was our job. I sold that duck. I was in love with that duck, which is nearly impossible to act. I've never been ashamed of my work in that movie. That was some of the hardest work to do.
Look, prime Leah Thompson, for a boy who's just realizing what sexual awakening means, she's just frolicking all over this bed in these pink panties, and it's just...
Oh. And you know, Ed Gale wasn't allowed to go to the screening of the movie? The
guy, of course, played, not, man. The movie's filthy, man. He was like 12.
No, that was Jordan Prentice, the guy, Ed Gale, the older gentleman who was in there, because they didn't want... So, he's like, I realized what Gloria and Willard were aiming for. They wanted audiences to see Howard the Duck character, not Howard the Duck, the little person. So that he was not allowed to go to the screening because they didn't want to see him.
Oh, that's messed up, son. Yeah. That's messed up. You know what else I really loved about this movie, man? So, yeah, Jeffrey Jones. Please don't Google him, ladies and gentlemen. No, yeah. In this movie.
Speaking of Ferris Bueller and Ravenous and Tim Burton movies, he's been in so many good movies, and it's so heartbreaking. It's just, please, I don't want to talk about him.
Yeah, don't Google him. Yeah. That's it. Don't Google Jeffrey Jones. Anyway, in this movie, Jeffrey Jones, the physical performance, the voice, okay? Oh, my God.
I am the Dark Overlord.
I have no license. I am not Jack.
Yes. Boom, and then he blows up 5 cars. That is, oh, my God.
And let me tell you something. During that chase scene, those cops were shooting willy-nilly at the flying the plane. They almost shot Leah Thompson.
Stormtrooper A.
Yeah. But they they shouldn't have been firing, though, Norbert. They shouldn't.
Well, at least
the plane.
In real life, police train to shoot center mass. And so they can do that all day. But the reality is, when the rubber meets the road, okay, cops don't actually solve a bunch of crimes. The solving rate is like between 20 and 30%. Some places 40. Like, cops are not what you believe them to be because of the movies. There's a reason why Dragnet had the support of the LAPD, you know? Mm-hmm. They're boosting up their profile, man. So, yeah, when you say that these even actors who were playing cops, that's hilarious. They were being more like cops than they realized. It's funny.
No, you're right. I mean, but... oh, gosh. But I got to tell you, too, just going back to that voice, and just he sells that role. And I got to say, that final monster, the Dark Overlord monster...
It's brilliant. Ray Harryhausen stop motion composite, right?
Yeah,
composite.
Beautiful. Just a total like stop motion composite. Look beautiful.
Yeah.
A lot of work. But what a great monster, man.
It was brilliant, man. It was brilliant. And it was gross because they zoom. There are some close-ups, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2021, bro. So our TVs are sharper than TVs have ever been. And when you get to look close up, the eyes, when he throws out that tentacle from the hole in his hand, it looks moist. It is gross, man. Okay. And it was, dude, this is ILM. This movie still hold the effects in this movie still hold up. Not necessarily Jurassic Park, but they still hold up. Go ahead.
You know what I love about early? Oh no, I keep cutting you off. You get me so excited to say things, and then I'm like, ah. What I like about ILM is that Lucas, whenever you watch, so I recently had to do some research for Rotten Tomatoes for the podcast about the prequels, and Lucas would just show up and be like, I want this done. And ILM's like, this doesn't exist. And then George does. And George says, it does now. Like, that's awesome. That's legitimately what he said. Then you have Howard the Duck. We need this done. Well, it happens now. You're getting this done. Mummy, when Stephen Sommers was working on that, they were like, how are we going to do this, Stephen Sommers? He's like, I don't know. Just get it done.
And did they literally call him Stephen Sommers? Yep. Stephen Sommers, would you like cream in your coffee? Hello, Stephen Sommers.
What can we do about this, Stephen Sommers? And I recently had another movie I was covering recently? But I was covering another movie recently that ILM did as well. And they said, we like working with this person because they asked for the impossible. And we have to deliver the impossible. And it's a lot of hard work. And it's very Alien. They said that. Like, you're
there you go.
And I don't know if Alien did that. I forget was it Alien? It was an ILM movie. But someone just said, I want the impossible. And then the guy's like, listen, we delivered it. So when they tell us, I want the impossible, we do it. Because then we're the people who made the impossible happen. And
agreed,
I love
man.
That about them.
ILM special effect, okay? There is something to be said about the fact that Star Wars came out in 1977, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that looks fake. The outer space scenes.
Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing about... That's the one great thing about George Lucas. Is he gets out there... And he says, remember when Attack of the Clones came out? He said, digital film is dead. Digital is now. He's a guy that just, I don't know. That's what I love about him. He just wants to push everything past what they can do.
But this is the problem. This is the problem. There's a reason why the prequels are just gorgeous looking films, but soulless.
Soulless. I mean, no one can act. I mean, Natalie Portman, she's now an Oscar winning actress. She was lost. Like, everybody was lost on that movie. And she even admitted she felt like a kid on there. I mean, you have Samuel Jackson, Ewan McGregor, Liam Neeson. You have excellent actors.
These are legit actors. And they have nothing to go off of.
Yeah.
Which is what makes, to bring it back in a circle, Leah Thompson's performance in this movie even more incredible.
Exactly.
Because she's acting with a broken sock in Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
And she makes it look so genuine. Like, you think she's... There is such a will they, won't they about mm-hmm. this movie. That is impossible.
And she sells it. Duck. That's hard work right there. It. She nailed it. And I love her confidence about that. And that's another reason why I can never sit here and just be like, this movie sucks.
Because people
put the work in on the day. Do I think some of the higher up decisions probably weren't the best? Sure. But after working on a bunch of sets, man, I think the people on this worked their butts off to make the best thing they could. And I mean, you know, the cinematographer had two Academy Award nominations. So Richard Klein was an Oscar-nominated cinematographer working on this. Peter Jameson.
There are no bums.
None.
No, I was just going to say, there are no bums here. Go ahead, Peter Jameson.
He did, like, Point Break. He did Mulholland. He was a Lynch guy. He did Mulholland Drive. I mean, this is a guy who... before this, he had done, Swing Shift. Actually, I love that movie. He did Halloween 3.
I remember that.
Used Cars. He was a Zemeckis guy. Then he went and did Exit to Eden. But Empire Records. Actually, that's a really great production design.
That's a beautiful looking movie.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, man, because you mentioned earlier that your favorite scene is the biplane.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is the diner.
Oh, it's so crazy. And then he blocks all the doors off and blows up the coffee maker for about 30 seconds.
I'm going to tell you right now. This is why the diner is legit. Number one, the makeup on Jennings. He comes in, he looks like he's got a sunburn. By the time he leaves, he looks like he's just been bathing in the waters of Chernobyl, right? He's creepy as hell. Number two, the voice is just coming out. Jennings, you got to do something. She forgot my eggs.
He
gets his little one-liners in.
Dark Overlord's got jokes.
Dark Overlord is a pun overlord, quite frankly. Number three, the waitress.
Oh, she's hilarious. Waitress.
The waitress did something for me, bro. The waitress is the definition of she's playing hard to get. She's playing it because she likes me. I had a thing for that waitress as a kid, and I don't know why. She's so chipper. She's so wonderful. She's so kind. She takes the abuse of Howard and the Dark Overlord of the universe, and nothing ever bothers her, you know? Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, hostility is a psychic boomerang, man, and I believe that. That's her line.
That's what she says?
Hostility is a psychic boomerang.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a brilliant. It's a brilliant line.
Yeah, there's a lot of random characters with personality in this film.
Yeah.
Which I do like.
Yeah.
Even the guy who's like, I need a neck brace. Like, there's a lot of extra lines.
Yeah, it's when he rammed the back.
Oh, man. And like, put it in brake. I didn't do it. Someone hit me.
Yeah, yeah. But in the diner, right, not only are they planning to eat Howard after they decide that he is actually a duck and a freak, but they don't even take his clothes off when they start seasoning him,
oh,
man.
Oh, yeah, and they're putting salt on him and stuff.
Yeah, they're putting salt on him. They put a celery stick in his mouth. The chef just decides, I'm going to sprinkle him with lettuce. You don't season with lettuce, dude. What is happening here? And this is the joy of Joe Roma's Cajun sushi. What is happening in that kitchen, bro? What is happening? Who are these people? This is Cleveland, Ohio, a.k.a. Cleveland. Yeah.
They need a movie just based on that.
The diner
scene. Tim Roth in there put...
It's the diner scene's the best, man. Because the diner scene's the best because it doesn't have the weird sexual tension of the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It doesn't have the weird sexual tension of the bedroom or the spa, right? It's got 80s sitcom comedy just out the wazoo, as they would say in the 80s. And we get to see that actually, Dark Overlord of the Universe, yeah, Wu-Tang Clan is nothing to F with.
He's got some bits. I would just put on the last 50 minutes of this movie. Just put it there. I could leave the first hour. And I know that sounds terrible to people, but that's when it picks up. You have the plane. You have the diner. You have the wonderful monster. You have the really cool little ATV that is just drifting around this warehouse.
Right, right.
And just Tim Robbins doing A++ physical comedy, just falling into everything.
Tim Robbins is hilarious in this movie.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate you saying this, man. What's our next one? What's our next clue? Clue.
Oh, please tell me it's Clue.
I think it is Clue.
It's Clue.
Yeah, I think it's Clue next. So you sent me a list, and then we've kind of slowly let it go through the conversation. But I think it is Clue next, man. I think that's going to be fun.
Dude, Clue is a movie that, if AI actually existed, it would be a choose-your-own-adventure movie. I love that movie so much. And the cast is iconic at this point.
Well, let's see. Let me look.
The cast. Take a look. Take your time. Take your time and look up the cast.
This is good podcasting. But I think it's fun because Norbert sent me a list. And I'm just going, you just sent me a list. And I'm like, okay, we're going to work our way through this whole thing. But then you and I chat a lot, and then I always lose it.
All right. Here you go. Since you've taken too much time.
Oh, wait, here it is. Clue.
Eileen Brennan.
And then you have Fear of a Black Hat. And then you have Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That, you know what? I will fight people with knives and forks if they tell me that Hitchhiker's Guide is a bad movie. Wait, I read the book.
Who says that?
Look, you go on the internet, okay? And just, there was a lot of hate on the movie Hitchhiker's Guide. I felt that it captured the spirit of the book. And Mos Def as Ford Prefect, man, inspired casting.
Mos Def is the best. 16 Blocks.
He was awesome. As Ford Prefect, man.
I wish he was in more movies. I loved him. Be Kind, Rewind.
He certainly has enough children to feed, so he is doing something, even if you don't know about it. He's got a lot of kids, bro.
Well, thank you for joining me, man.
No problem, man. And I love you like a brother.
Ditto. In the words of Swayze, ditto. I love you too,
man. No duck is an island, Mark. Always remember that.
Oh, bro.
That's the arc.
All right, well, thank you for joining me.
It's the arc of Howard, man. No duck is an island. He realized that he needed help, and he got it.
Oh, man. Beautiful film.
There it is.
All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, for Norbin, Satan, Sluts, Morvan, this is Movie Stones of Flicks. We'll see you next week.
Yeah.